Alan, good morning. It looks like we still have four members of the committee, isn't it?
Good morning, Chair. I've got six members. It's Ms. Mabeletsa, Dion George, Peter Wessels, Ms. Abraham, yourself, and the Villiers.
Okay. We'll have to start to have a long day today because we are having a mini plenary budget. Okay, thanks, honorable members. Let me welcome members of the Standing Committee Finance. Welcome officials from Treasury. I'm not sure if the Deputy Minister is in the platform. Welcome officials from Parliament. In your different categories, PBO and the support team, SCOF, communications team, legal services. Welcome stakeholders who are in the platform. Welcome the media. Welcome the public in general. We're meeting today to get the to consider and adopt the report clause by clause on the financial sector and deposit insurance levies bill and the financial sector and deposit insurance levies and deposit insurance premiums bill. The meeting is officially open. Do we have apologies?
No.
Alan? Okay. I think it will be apology of Tebogo. A mother was being buried yesterday. We send a message of condolence to her. Let's first get the report from Treasury that we requested last week on the socio-economic impact of the bills that are before us. I see, Alan, you have emailed a report to us this morning. So who's going to table the report? Before we go clause by clause, we thought it would be important that we have an understanding of how this legislation, if it is accepted to at the end of the day, going to impact on the consumers and small players and the small players in the particular. Is Momo in the platform?
Morning, Chair and honorable members. Yes, Chair, I am.
Over to you. Or is the Deputy Minister on the platform?
No, he's not here. I think he's gone. He's overseas at the moment.
Okay. Over to you, Comrade Momo.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Chair, no, thank you for the opportunity to come in. Yes, the committee had us working furiously over the last few days. I think just to deal with the concerns that were expressed at the meeting last week. So what we've done, Chair, we've got both a brief presentation, but we also provided a report. I want to emphasize the report is not has got some new info, but is largely based on the socioeconomic impact study that was done for the bill, and which we had published and referred to when we presented on the bill. So I would still refer the members to that document as a base document, but we've also just updated it. And I think what our document shows, and I don't know from our team, Ellen, if we can put up the presentation. So since we met last week, Chair, we also had a meeting with the FIA, because we did say that we wanted to just engage with them over the concerns they had on the increases in fees, and there's a special levy as well that we talked to them about, and we have a proposal today that we will put forward. Chair, I think I won't go through the document in detail, and as I said, we'll touch on it through the presentation, because we have quite a big team here. If you want to just put up all the names, the next slide, Bukile. So if you look at the team, I mean, we've got a big treasury team, Bukile, Lange, and Janine are here. We have the PA, we have FISCA, we have the Reserve Bank as a Reserve Bank as well. And we may have other financial regulatory bodies present here as well. Chair, and I guess that just gets to the essence that this bill is meant to not just fund the regulation and supervision of financial sector bodies, but to say actually this sector, is a relatively lucrative sector for those major players. And, you know, we feel that they can and must pay for their own supervision. When we did the Twin Peaks, we used to go around and say that, the especially the banking sectors is like almost like a nuclear facility, that if you don't regulate it in terms of standard practices, prudentially to check over their financial health, there will be problems. And one's got to check that nobody's taking shortcuts to make short-term profits, that they are able to deliver on their promises. But I should also add that how they treat their customers is also critical, and hence the market conduct element. And the issue there really, Chair, is that if you even look at the 2008 financial crisis, they had what we call these teaser loans for mortgages, which wasn't the underlying reason for the crisis, but became the trigger for the crisis. And I think in a similar way, we had our own problems of Prudentia when we were developing this book, where many of the customers were robbed. And in fact, we had a situation of widows and low-income workers who had put their savings and were robbed. And so this has been a long journey, and in a sense, while there's still the coffee bill and other bills that will come through, this is the final big bill that's required to fund the entire structure. And it is an expensive structure, but I should add that we also have to go by what the standards have developed internationally. And certainly up to 2008, the regime to deal with the financial sector is actually very intrusive. It is very expensive. It does have a huge burden on financial institutions. And yes, it does impact on new entrants and transformation and those objectives. So we have a difficult sort of approach to get all these objectives, not just to make sure that our financial institutions are safe, so prudential financial health is good, not just that they deal with their customers fairly at all stages, and don't abuse that, because the power is asymmetric. Some of the financial institutions, big banks, are very big and can, you know, outpay any legal defense that retail customers may have when they have a complaint and take the matter to court. And that's why we've developed the ombud system, so that disputes can be dealt with in an inexpensive way. And in a sense, in a way where, you know, there's a bit more fairness for the customers. And then, of course, we've got very strong anti-money laundering provisions that we have to deal with. And the committee has heard, you know, the cost of South Africa facing the grey list. If we get onto the grey list, it will have consequences for us. And of course, financial inclusion and transformation. Those are extremely important objectives for our country. And achieving, I think, all those four objectives is the critical element here. So as we've implemented this system, you know, there's been, it's been a phased introduction where we first did the policy, then we did the legislation, and then the regulatory bodies have been set up and basically dependent on the old style of funding, like the FSB had a system of levies. But we found that all of these are inadequate for the new responsibilities that they have, and that we also got to then expand for that. Next slide, please. So, Chair, again, our document, you know, a lot of the information is not new. These were also slides that we had put up or information that we had provided, but we know that there was a lot of information and we just wanted to just bring it together as well, given the concerns that were expressed. And I think those concerns, Chair, are, for me, always legitimate concerns, and something we need to continually look at is the cost of regulation worthwhile? Is it bringing up benefits? Is it resulting in a safer financial sector? Indeed, even over this weekend, we had to put a bank under curatorship. Not a nice thing to do, but you know, the regulators actually have sometimes a very tough job, not very popular, and kind of engage with the nitty-gritty behind the scenes of information and analyzing what management is saying about their institutions. So if you look at the financial sector, and of course this goes beyond banks, insurance, and so on, and I think it would even include estate agents and so on, this it makes up 24% of the economy. So it has been growing, and you can see relative even to manufacturing, it's very large. Next slide. And I guess, Chair, that gets to the heart of the issue, that the financial sector is not only central to the economy, it's central to all the other sectors. The other sectors cannot operate unless the financial sector is operating efficiently. And so I won't go through all these issues, but I think what we've done is just to indicate, just to give a sense to the committee, because these regulators are also often not, like if you look at the PA, it's not a PFMA entity. It is because the SARB doesn't have the PFMA applied to it. So what happens is that we've got to just take that into account. And their budgets often don't necessarily come before Parliament because it's before the entire Reserve Bank's budget or their own sort of income statements and so on. So, Chair, before the Twin Peaks system in 2018, the Banking Supervision Department at the SARB was only supervising banks and nobody else. After 2018, when we set up the PA, it firstly expanded its scope to non-banks and every other financial institution, and had to deal with financial conglomerates, had to deal with market infrastructure, cooperative financial institutions. So, you know, the scope increased significantly for them. The FSB at that time did everything but didn't do banks. So they had to include then the banks. So if you look at their budget, or if you look at the levies, 500 million rands, including a special levy, which is just for 2 years to get the system going, is proposed to be collected as levies for the PA by the Reserve Bank, and 11 million rand in fees. The total operating expenditure for the PA, we estimate, is about 895 million rands, and 54% is for remuneration. You'll notice that regulators tend to have highly skilled people, and the fee structure and the salary structure is an important component, and they have 99 million rand for other operational costs and a further 309 million rand for indirect operational costs, IT infrastructure and so on. And I want to emphasize the infrastructure, IT and so on is quite an important component. Chair, the SARB will still continue to subsidize an operating deficit of just under 400 million rand. That's our estimate of 300 million rand. Next slide, please. When you look at the FISCA, it's, as I said, it too was established in 2018. It took over from the old FSB, and they now expanded their scope to banks, but they also expanded their scope to deal more strongly with the fair treatment of customers, financial integrity, et cetera, consumer education, and so on. And if you look at their levies, I mean, it's more than the PA, but it's so they'll collect about 883 million rand in levies, and an additional income of 66 million is envisaged on fees and so on. And their operating expenditure is about 967 million rand. I should emphasize that the FISCA is a a PFMA entity, so their budgets and so on are dealt with in terms of the PFMA, and 617 million is projected as staff expenses, of which 530 is remuneration, and 350 million for general expenses, again having call centers, IT infrastructure and so on. So you can see that both have pretty substantial budgets. Next slide, please. I think it's also important to note that we also fund lots of the other financial sector bodies. So we've got to fund the Ombuds system, the pensions funds, adjudicator, the FICE Ombud, and you can see the amounts, 90 million, 81 million. The Financial Services Tribunal, the Ombuds Council itself, and of course, there's the whole cooperation of deposit insurance, the bill that also was passed recently by Parliament, or it's now an act. So all of these have also got to be taken into account. Next slide, please. Bukile, maybe you want to start coming in and start looking at these slides.
Thank you, Mama. We'll just take members through the, as you're doing, Mama, just a recap of the figures that we had presented last time round. And that is just to give a sense of the committee, of the coverage from a sector perspective of the levies, or at least where the levies will be used. As well as, very importantly, on the right-hand side, to give a sense of the overall financial system. This will give committee members a sense of who is shouldering the burden of funding the regulators and the highlights of the budget at the moment has just provided. The overall takeaway, Chair, is that the banking sector and the largest parts of the financial system are shouldering the vast majority of the cost, and this reflects their size and importance and the disproportionate benefit that they would receive from a safe and stable financial sector, but it also provides it also helps promote competition and new entrants, and in particular new smaller and transformed entrants. The an additional point, Chair, to bear in mind when thinking about how the levies have been calibrated is just to bear in mind that what we have, although it's a completely new system, and MOMO has taken us through the journey that has brought us to this point, that the levies that we're proposing in this bill are not from a zero base. Entities have been performing, paying in levies up to now, but the new Twin Peaks system, which ensures more effective, intensive, and intrusive supervision, as well as new mandates for both institutions. In the case of FISCA, this is largely related to banks and a large expansion of the numbers of entities that will be regulated. I stand in a correction, but this is close to, I understand, 15,000 individual entities. That this will be funded by a marginal increase rather than a from a zero base. I'm not going to spend too much time on this, Chair. MoMA has made the point that in calibrating levies, there is a trade-off. Ultimately, the overall point is that the cost cannot be avoided. They can simply be borne by a different party. In the case of weaker regulation or softer regulation, more accommodative to the individual firms operating in the financial sector, those costs are simply passed on to the customers through lapses or infractions on by individual financial institutions, which are ultimately borne by the customers. In the case of banks, this is evidenced by a failure of banks. We saw that, as Mona pointed out, in previous bank failures, but also there's increasing evidence that I'm sure members will be aware of in new areas such as crypto assets, Ponzi schemes, and the like. So very quickly, Chair, bring up the point, just to highlight what the benefits to consumers are of effective financial regulation. Those are that the retail customers in general benefit from a substantially strengthened market kind of framework, buttressed by strategies on financial capability and inclusion, well-managed financial institutions, and their shareholders, and this is, and this I guess is in the transformation paradigm also benefit from consistent regulatory system and a stronger operating environment and more certain operating environment. The poorest households benefit from improved conduct of business. This anecdotally is evidenced by the help that customers had received, particularly individual customers during COVID, where the regulators intervened to make sure that those individuals and small businesses that had insurance covered actually received their insurance coverage in line with the policies. There's also a promotion of strategies for financial education and financial inclusion, as well as proactive approach by fiscal to assist in unclaimed or ownerless assets. And lastly, overall financial sector benefits through the implementation supervision of a strengthened conduct framework, which will improve the transparency, suitability, and cost of financial products and services, and assisting in building greater confidence and trust in financial institutions while addressing market conduct and prudential risks. This is a graphical illustration and some examples, Chair, of what we've highlighted. We narrow in on some specific areas on retirement benefits. You know, FISCA is responsible for the regulation of retirement funds. And further regulatory enhancements will be provided through the upcoming COFI bill. The fiscal will focus on abusive practices for non-payment of retirement contributions by employers to the detriment of workers. High administrative charges are still prevalent and will require strong and effective regulatory intervention by the fiscal to reduce these. There's been some attention on unclaimed benefits, and here, Chair, the benefit of regulation is particularly evident. In 2020, unclaimed benefits amounted to about $47 billion. The poor and vulnerable are particularly affected here. FISCA has taken several measures to address this issue and taken to create a search engine and re-relating to the and this, I guess, is illustrative of the IT and systems investments that are necessary as well. Today, FISCA has dealt with over 300,000 inquiries, of which 73% were searches that were conducted through FISCA's infrastructure. Lastly, Chair, just a highlight on scams, fraud, and misconduct. The VBS Mutual Bank contributed to significant deposit losses, as we're all aware. We have all seen those images of the most vulnerable queuing up to ensure that their deposits were safe. Of course, in this bill, Chair, you'd be aware that we provide for the funding and the establishment of the Corporation for Deposit Insurance, which seeks to ensure that the public will have access to their funds within a reasonable time, and the absolute protection of those deposits up to a maximum of 100,000 rands. But in addition to that, as we've highlighted, some financial education will also be required. Then there's two further examples. A crypto asset scam example, as well as Steinhoff, which members will be well aware of. So, Jeb, we're sort of moving towards a conclusion of the impact and the benefits for individuals that we've highlighted in the CS report that I'm going to refer to. But as well as in our overarching presentation. And that is that whilst levies fall on financial institutions and do impact their profits, question is how big of those costs will be ultimately shifted onto consumers. And furthermore, what is the commensurate benefit of those costs? The reasons for imposing levies, Chair, as we've highlighted, is purely on a cost recovery basis. Banks which account for the majority of the proposed levies do not currently pay for the full cost of their regulation, either through the Prudential Authority or the Market Conduct Authority. A special levy, Chair, which Mona's gone into, which is a once-off levy aimed at establishing the regulators and providing them with the systems required to undertake their mandates, has been reduced as much as we were able to. And lastly, Chair, the delayed implementation of some levies will reduce the increase of payable levies from 290 million, or 40 million to about 250 million in the immediate future. Affordability is one very important mitigating circumstances, and we in this bill have made allowances for exceptional circumstances to preserve the financial institutions that find themselves operating in significant distress, as well as, of course, associated jobs in those financial institutions. One recent example, of course, is COVID-19, but the more recent KZN floods and riots are other examples. Chair, we had, following your foreign engagements last week, had further specific engagements aimed at what additional measures we could introduce through the bill to reduce the burden on the smallest entrants and in particular small black-owned financial institutions in the intermediary space. As Mona indicated, Chair, we have had specific additional engagements with the FIA, which presented. And I'll now just hand over to our colleague from FISCA to outline in a very broad sort of broad parameters of what the accommodation will look like to further reduce the burden on that specific group. The Deputy Commissioner is on the line and can provide details on that. Cathy?
Good morning, everyone. I hope that you can see me. Okay, great. Can you put the slide back up, please? Great, thanks very much. All right, so yes, on the back of the meeting with the FIA, and just to remind, the FIA is a wide representative body of intermediaries. And intermediaries are currently regulated in terms of the FASE legislation. So that's the Financial Advisory and Intermediary Services Act. The concern raised by the intermediary group related to the perception of quite radical increases. I think the point that we had made is that one of the points that we made is that these amounts, when you look at the percentages, reflect more than how this translates in absolute terms. So we really are, particularly for the small players, we're talking about the difference in like 100 Rand or thereabouts between the old and new levy structure. So the amounts that we're working with are the absolute amounts that we're working with per intermediary are relatively small on the lower end of the scale, although that does escalate for the larger FSPs. So our starting point and just on the back of the meeting was to reconsider, and we got quite strong guidance from the FIA that we really should be accommodating the smaller entities to the extent possible. And with that in mind, and keeping the overall contribution of the FSPs to the FSCA constant, they're currently, in terms of the levy structure, contribute about a third of the FSCA budget. And that's also just noting the very many intermediaries that we have, which is nearly 11,000 entities or persons. So we're talking about a lot of entities here. They do form the bulk of the FSCA budget on the back of that. And so what we did was we revisited saying, well, if this is the aggregate amount that the intermediary should be contributing towards the budget, which we think is fair because of the numbers of those businesses, the resources that it takes to appropriately supervise them and monitor them and identify the risks and respond to the risks and the likes, then is there a way that we can change the formula to shift the balance of responsibility between the larger and smaller players? And the way in which we have done that was then to, in effect, be targeting a inflation-related increase for the smallest players. In effect, would be a sole prop. So that's literally one person who's acting as an advisor or a salesperson in some capacity. But there are other kinds of small entities in this bucket as well. So it could be have it where it's a smallish entity, which could be a partnership or a CC, might only have one key individual, one rep, could just have one key individual. And we worked the numbers for all of these smallish FSPs targeting this inflation range. And the way in which we would do that in terms of the levy formula would then be to raise the cap, because obviously what a cap does is it means that for large entities, once you get above a certain threshold, you actually still pay a constant amount. So the larger you are, the more you benefit in terms of a cap. If we, to the extent that we raise the cap, what that meant is we can then be reducing the variable components within the formula and therefore reducing the aggregate amount that smaller entities would be contributing. So with that in mind, and I point you now to the first box at the top. So it has the current levy, which is the yellow, and it shows that the maximum levy currently would be 195, approximately, or just under 2 million. In terms of the money bill, the cap was then positioned at 2 million. The proposed change as an alternative is to then raise the cap from 2 to 2.5 million, which means the largest players would be paying more. Keep in mind, and we did look at these numbers as well, we're talking about very large FSPs here. So FSPs are in fact, most entities in the financial system could be an FSP as well. So the banks will all be FSPs, the insurers will be FSPs, large investment houses will be FSPs. So that you would have a bank license and you would need a phase license because of this intermediation activity that a bank is nonetheless performing. So those are the kinds of entities we're talking about. In terms of the numbers, I think for an FSP on the larger end, these entities would have upwards of 8,500 reps, for example. So that's a lot of people that we are needing to supervise and oversee as an organization. So by raising the cap from 2 million to 2.5 million, if we then go to, and it isn't just the cap, as I say, it's if the cap gets raised, it's the variable components within the levy can be reduced. And so if we look at, and this example here is given for a sole prop. So this is the one man, as it were, one woman. The net effect is to, and I draw your attention to the grand total, which is towards the bottom. I think it's 4 from the bottom, the grand total. It's just above the blue, the dark blue highlighted sections. So under the current levy regime, it would be 4,964 per year. The original proposed, as per the tabled levy bill, presented it as 5,690 per year. And with this proposed change, it reduces the levy to 5,239 rand per year. If you look at that per month, it changes it from the current levy would be 413 rand. And as I say, that these are the absolute value of these numbers are quite small, which does to a certain degree restrict the play that we have. But it goes from 413, we were initially presented it at 474 rand per month. We've brought that down to 436 rand per month. That translates into an increase of 5.5%, which is near approximate the current inflation figure, as opposed to the initial 15%. I think what's also important to highlight, that special levy that's been brought in, this is a once-off. So it will be over the first 2 years. So these increases that I've just presented now include that special levy. From year 3, 4, 5, 6, that amount falls away. And so we've also, this last line that you see here, then shows the increase, the change for those subsequent years once the special levy has played through. And you will see that it had been initially at 7%, and now, in fact, it implies a decrease of 1.5% when the special levy is taken out. And that's relative, these percentage changes are relative to the status quo. In other words, what these entities are currently being charged. And these, this pattern that I've just reflected now plays out when we look at the smaller businesses. So it would be a decline in the increase, as it were, from what was originally presented and tabled in terms of the levies bill. But I think we will then be happy to engage further with the committee if there are further questions in this regard. Thank you, Bukile. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, no, thanks. Chair, maybe then just to conclude, because we've come to the end of the presentation, I think what we try to say is, you know, given the socioeconomic impact study that was conducted and some of the more updated information we've brought forward today, we've tried to just indicate what the operational costs are of not just the two authorities, but the Ombuds system, consumer education, and what we think are the overwhelming benefits to the consumers, to the country, and even to the companies themselves. Yes, we accept that won't be all of it. Ultimately, does go, you know, fall on the customer, but I think the system is designed to deal with the many problems you encounter. And let me say, the problems you encounter in the financial sector is that temptation is always there to do, for people to cheat, unless you have strong controls and a strong regulatory system and disincentives for people to take money away. Banking, for example, is all about trust. If people don't trust the bank, they're going to rush to take their deposits out, and it causes a problem. It can cause a bank run and so on. And that's why it's important that depositors, investors always have confidence that their money is safe. And in addition, I think we've also tried to take into account that the big institutions don't abuse their power and treat their customers fairly. So we feel that the benefits far exceed the costs. A point that I've not tried to also stretch is that in any case, many of these requirements are needed for us to be able to trade internationally, for our banks, for example, to have correspondent banking relationships and to be able to pay for our imports and to receive the money that's due to them when there's exports. So overall, the benefits are enormous. We accept that there are, there are impacts on especially the smaller businesses. I think we met, as I said, with the FIA, and to some extent, I think just what Kathy has just outlined, the FISCA has taken that into account to some extent. And I think we still remain and have options and exemptions for problems that we've that may still arise. There are ways that we can still deal with it. So, Chair, I'm hoping that this has indicated to you that there has been a thorough assessment done. It's not something that's new. It's been going well over 10 years. In fact, about 11 years. And this is the final element to get the funding of the system right and to make the regulated entities actually pay towards the cost of regulating them rather than to use taxpayer funds. And at the end of the day, when some of, like a major bank fails, given that these are what we call systemically important financial institutions, they do put taxpayer funds at risk and create moral hazard. So those are the problems that we are trying to prevent. Chair, I think what we also have today is, obviously after this discussion, the department has prepared, as you said at the start, to be ready to do clause by clause and so on. And Janine will come in later, but she's got the A bill and the B bill or whatever labeling we have just to show the changes, including some of the changes that we've had to make in response to the comments received and some of the latest adjustments that we've made as a result of the hearings last week. Thank you, Chair. I'll stop there.
Okay. Thanks very much, Comrade Momo, and the entire team that has put together this comprehensive report. Thanks very much for doing that, because it was important for us as lawmakers to understand the impact that this bill that we're going to pass will have on both the players and consumers and the public in general. Thanks. Let me see if there are members who want to make comments and also ask clarity seeking questions. Dr. George?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to keep my video off because I'm having some connectivity issues. Thanks very much for the presentation. I can see that thought has been put into it. I do, and I've been thinking about this for a bit. I do think that it is unusual for an entity that wants to tax the sector that it is regulating to cover its costs to be setting the level of that tax. So you have the FSCA in this instance. They are going to be regulating or regulate, and that they then are looking at that sector. They are then looking at what operational costs they might have, and then basically setting a specific tax for that operation. Now, in that particular situation, there's very little incentive to be lean and efficient, or as lean as efficient as they can be. And we saw that we started off with 290 million and we're now down to 249 million. Now, you know, obviously that's a reasonable number of difference. So I'm not convinced that there's been a sufficient process of being as absolutely efficient as possible, because I mean, if you've got somebody negotiating, for example, for their own salary, for example, you would start somewhere and then you'd negotiate downwards. So I don't know if that is the case, but I think that core issue is problematic for me, because if you're going to negotiate basically for yourself in an industry that you're going to regulate, I think that could be conflictual. Then also, given the state of our economy, I mean, you know, we don't have to go into all the detail of it, but we know that we've got rampant inflation. We haven't yet seen the impact of inflation yet on the people of South Africa, but it is going to be horrendous. So we've got rampant inflation hitting us. We've got massive increases to fuel prices. We've got supply chain problems. We have food insecurity, etc. We've got the war in Ukraine, where we don't even know yet what that impact's going to be on the globe and us. So we are heading into very heavy and choppy water. We're already in very heavy and choppy water historically, because we weren't ready when COVID came, and we certainly weren't ready when the impact of the war came. So we're being battered, and consumers in South Africa are being hammered. That's pretty clear. I don't think anybody argues about that. And it is pretty obvious that the taxes charged on the sector are going to land up with the consumer. So essentially, it's another tax that the hard-working and battered people of South Africa have to absorb. And that is problematic. In my opinion, these numbers are too high. And I obviously agree regulation is vital. It is true that we do want to have regulation. We do want to make sure that the sector is as effectively as possible regulated. However, we can only afford what we can afford. And we need to manage that regulation within an available envelope. And increasing the envelope at this point, to my view, is not something that we can absorb. So that's my initial feedback. I also wanted to just ask Chairperson whether, in terms of process, we needed to get the inputs from the stakeholders, because stakeholders made certain representations to us, and then they were heard, and then there's been an adjustment made, whether we need to get the feedback from those stakeholders. Because, I mean, I do think there could be some concern that if you're a let's say, for example, you're a financial service provider and you're now going to have to pay more, for example, that you've given your inputs, you are actually talking directly to that regulator, who is then setting the level that they would like to see, because they want to operate. But what is that intervening mechanism then? Is that not the Treasury's role then to mitigate that? Say, well, this is what the stakeholders want. This is what the regulator wants. What do we think? I mean, obviously Treasury does know probably more than all of us of how difficult the economy is. So I'm just also talking to process, Chair. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Dr. George. Any other hand? I don't see any other hand from my side. Just to understand, I heard Kathy, when she was presenting, that when you met the FIA, it looks there are one or two outstanding issues that you still have to engage with them. What are those issues? In terms of the process, Dr. George, we have given the stakeholders enough time to make both written and oral submissions. If you remember, this report that is presented today arose as a result of our discussions last week after we're engaging with the stakeholders. So we'll be able to integrate all the concerns that were raised even by the stakeholders in our report. So what Treasury has reported this morning will also form part of the report that we'll have to submit to Parliament. The question might be, is the team, SCOPA team, ready to integrate all the issues that have been presented today? They have to indicate to us. If not, we might have to adopt the report on another day, because we don't want to do things in a rush manner. But back to you, Treasury, on the question that Dr. George has raised and what I've raised in regard to your engagement with the FIA.
No, thank you, Chair. No, Chair, I think Dr. Honorable George does raise an important point. I think that you can't have a situation where the regulators determine their own or the fees by themselves, and in a sense, there's no oversight of assessing the expenditure and so on. But let me add that, you know, we have put in place governance mechanisms, and ultimately there's a role for the minister to oversee and approve the budget. And when it comes to the current system, it's much more transparent than the previous system, where the FSB would do it in a more direct way, even though they did seek approvals from the minister. But in this system, as you can see, it's all before Parliament. There's a whole schedule. So it's not something that the fiscal determines by itself. There's a role for Treasury and the minister to oversee and to make sure that their costs are in line with what the Treasury expects, and that there's no easy shifting of the burden onto institutions or consumers. I also take from what he says that perhaps we should be, that should also be done more explicitly. I think the Act does allow for it, but we'll certainly, I think, look at that. I think that's an important point to take into account. Just in terms of your question, Chair, on, you know, we are certainly ready. I think Janine can come in and comment on that. She has made the adjustments, but maybe just to let Kathy just answer the question you pose on some of the issues outstanding. Kathy?
Thank you, Marwa, and thank you, Chair. I'd like to also just comment on the budget, on a couple of the other aspects as well. So on the budgeting and in effect the levies process, to your point, this is definitely not something that we set and set unilaterally. It is a highly transparent process that is strictly governed by both the PFMA, and in fact, through the FSRA, we set additional, at the time, set additional requirements on us regulators to make sure that there are even greater levels of transparency and accountability, which I think this process here is part evidence of that. It's an important, a very important point about the state of the economy and the stresses that that business and consumers are under. And the evidence, and this isn't just in South Africa, it's internationally, shows that when businesses go through periods of some degree of economic down cycle, that there is increased pressure on these businesses to adapt business models in way that favor shareholders over customers. So actually it's exactly at this point that you really need a close monitoring, and even closer monitoring and scrutiny of financial institutions to make sure that they are not trying to exploit, and I use that term very carefully because I know there are many good financial institutions who do not do this. But when under financial pressure, firms are inclined, and we can provide evidence to that, so supporting that as well. The other aspect which you particularly see, not only the stress on business models. In fact, I think African Bank was we all know the story well there, which is the epitome of what happens when a business model is under stress, and how those practices land up impacting the entity and customers. But you also land up seeing increases in scams. And this has been something that has proliferated over the COVID period, particularly as consumers have increasingly moved online. Again, it is very important that we acknowledge the role that the FSCA needs to be playing to be protecting consumers in this environment. I think also in terms of the numbers, and yes, of course, we have to look at the aggregate numbers, and they do seem very large. But just to give an indication, when you put these down for the consumers, we did some calculations for the bank. So it was one of the big banks, and looking at what the aggregate charge would be for both the PA and the FSCA relative to the number of customers that bank has. And it worked out to be around, it was under 10 Rand per year. Materially under 10 Rand per year. So I think we also need to be careful in making quite sweeping statements about that these numbers, these large numbers, they're going to hurt consumers, they're hurting businesses. Because when you actually get down to the detail, and when you compare the value that is being presented by the regulator vis-a-vis the losses which can be experienced by customers, of which in the report we go into in some detail, that I think underscores the balance that Vukile and Momo have been talking about in terms of, yes, we don't just want to go wild, but this level of oversight does come at a cost. And so how do we get that balance right? In terms of the FIA, yes, we have met with the FIA. I think we would welcome to confirm whether there were additional matters. The main issue that we were talking about was relating to the increases. And we, because as the FSCA, we've got access to all the numbers, we then supported Treasury and have supported Treasury in coming forward with these with this alternative option. The FIA has not being presented with this option. What we had agreed in the meeting is that we would take on board their recommendation that we need to be particularly sensitive to the smaller entities and try and make the changes more palatable for the smaller entities. And that's what we've come back and presented on today. Thank you, Chair and Mama.
Thank you, Chair. I think that's all from our side for now. As I said, Chair, you can, if you do need to, Janine can come in on the legal issues and so on, to the extent that that is ready to be submitted or presented today. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Comrade Momo and the team. And thanks very much for the comprehensive report. It makes our process much easier so that we have a better understanding of the impact of the bill that we are going to submit to Parliament. This was a very, very important process that we have to embark upon. Thanks very much, all the team members from different entities that report to Treasury. We'll have to move to the next item, Item 3, consideration and adoption of the committee report and clause by clause deliberation, sector deposit. Before we do that, let me find out from the research team so that I don't make their life difficult. After we have received the report and engaged it, will they be able to integrate what is in the report to such that we can adopt the committee report today? Dr. Shoke.
Yes, good morning, Chairperson and members and colleagues from National Treasury. We received the report yesterday evening, and I worked on it and tried to incorporate what was included in that report into the draft report of the committee. But then it's up to the committee to have a look when we process, after processing the clause by clause, to have a look at that report and see if it covers all the issues that the committee has raised.
Oh, okay.
Yes, there is a draft report, and Alan will put it up after going through the bills and the amendments.
Okay, thanks very much. Noxi, are you there? Honorable Abram? Alan, is Honorable Abram in the platform?
She was on this morning, Chair. I'm just checking to see quickly.
I'm here, Chair.
Yeah, she is.
Okay, Noxi, can you please go assist me to chair item 3.1 and 3.2? I've got issues with my computer here, and I must present the report for the debate of the mini plenary budget this afternoon. Something is not right with my gadget, so I have to rework my report, and I realize that I'm getting late. Can you please preside over 3.1 and 3.2 while I'm getting this somebody who's a technician here to assist me with the computer so that I can finalize my report for this afternoon?
It shouldn't be a problem, Chair.
Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable members, officials, and everybody who is a guest from National Treasury to the entities, we are now on 3.1, the consideration and the consideration and adoption of the committee report and clause by clause deliberation. Alan, is the report ready?
Good morning, Ms. Abram. Yes, it is. I've sent it through this morning. Just process-wise, I will project the bill as was tabled in Parliament, starting with Bill 3. There are proposed amendments. Because I'm going to share my screen, I'm going to have to ask either Janine or Bukile to just interject when there are amendments to a clause that the committee is considering. And it would obviously be up to the committee to discuss that or just to accept it and move on to the next clause. So that would be for Bill 3. The committee will then adopt or not adopt the bill with the proposed A-list amendments as presented by National Treasury and the other entities. Thereafter, the committee will then adopt the report. So for each, there has to be a mover and a seconder. Thank you. So I'll project Bill 3, and if the colleagues from National Treasury can just interject to say if there's an amendment. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Alan. Honorable members, there is the bill, and as Alan has just proposed, if Treasury has anything to say on, the parts that are being flighted at this point, we have definitions, arrangements of sections, part A. Anything to say, National Treasury, Momo?
Nothing on this page, thank you.
Yeah, Chair, I think Janine will come in. She's our legal
interjects. Janine who interjects, okay. Thank you. Okay, Alan, take us to part B. Part B, I think, okay, part B is fine, just one liner. Part C, Janine?
No changes on these, the arrangement of sections here. We will have a proposal for clause one just below shortly.
Okay. Schedules, we are on schedule one, schedule two, schedule three, schedule four, schedule five, and schedule six. Thank you. And now definitions and interpretation.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. So in the definitions, on page five, in the definition of supervised entity, we would propose an insertion in the definition of a supervised entity.
Mm-hmm.
So we would just add wording after where it says Financial Sector Regulation Act. We would just insert wording to say of the types listed in schedules 1 to 6. So this would just clarify the types of entities that are being referred to. So we would just propose a few words to be added at the end of line 9 on page 5 there.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Can we pass that now? We come to part A, Jenny.
We don't have any proposals on clause 2 or 3 or 4.
Okay. All right.
And then on clause 7, just coming up, we would have a proposal. So then in relation to clause 7, on page 6, in line 26, we would, after where it says the number 3 in brackets, we would propose to insert a paragraph A to make the existing clause a paragraph. And then below what would now become paragraph A, we would insert a new paragraph B that would say, where a levy has already been paid in full for a levy year or a levy period during which the license of a supervised entity is withdrawn or canceled, a refund of the levy must be provided to the supervised entity or the proportion of the levy year or levy period subsequent to the withdrawal or cancellation of the license. So this is to provide for the potential to repay a pro rata amount of the levy if an entity's license is revoked or canceled during the levy period. So we would just propose an insertion of a new paragraph in that subclause 3.
Mm-hmm. So we have 3A and B.
Yes, please. Yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Jamal. special levy, clause 8?
There's no proposals there. And then in clause 9, we would similarly propose an insertion of a wording for to insert a number of paragraph A after in subclause 4 to insert A, and then a new paragraph B, which would have the same wording as what we just indicated to be included in paragraph 7, clause 7, to allow for the pro rata repayment of a levy during a levy period if a license is revoked or cancelled. So that wording would be similar to what was proposed in clause 7 above. And then with clause 10, we have a proposal. And in clause 10, we would propose to adjust the wording of paragraph A slightly to say 1A, subclause 1A, to say the minister may amend a schedule with the concurrence of the financial sector body concerned, and after having published a proposed amended schedule in the Gazette for public comment for a period of at least 30 days, either by submitting an amended schedule to Parliament for approval or in accordance with subsection 4. So we would propose to amend paragraph A of subclause 1 in that regard. And then we would also propose to amend the wording at the beginning of paragraph C slightly to say, if Parliament does not pass a resolution approving, adopting amendments to, or rejecting the amended schedule within 3 months of the date of tabling, Parliament is deemed to have approved the amended schedule. And then that's the wording that would be proposed at the beginning of paragraph C. So that is what we would propose for clause 10. So that would enable a comment period prior to tabling of the amended schedules in Parliament for consideration. Thank you. And then in clause 11, we have some brief refinements to in paragraphs A, B, and C. We would propose to include wording to say in paragraph A that the Financial Sector Conduct Authority may, in writing, and then we would add the words, on application by a supervised entity or on its own initiative, exempt a supervised entity or a type or category of supervised entities from the payment of all or part of the financial sector levy specified in schedules 2 to 5. So we would add that the entities could apply on their own, or the authority could decide that it would wish to, that is appropriate to grant exemptions if it has assessed the situation and determined that it may be appropriate to grant exemptions. And it could be either to an individual entity or to a category of entities. And then we would propose similar wording just to be included at the beginning of paragraphs B and C, so that the prudential authority and the corporation similarly would be able to grant, have similar latitude to grant exemptions in relation to the levies imposed under the legislation. So that is our proposal for clause 11.
And then we don't have any proposals in relation to clause 12. Or 13. And then looking at schedule 1, in item 2 on page 10, we would propose that item 2 be amended to read as follows, to say that a clearinghouse that is approved in terms of section 110 subsection 6 of the Financial Markets Act to perform the functions of a central counterparty, and we would insert the wording, or a licensed independent clearinghouse who is also licensed as a central counterparty, is liable to pay the levy applicable to a central counterparty, but is not liable to pay the levy applicable to an associated clearinghouse or an independent clearinghouse. So we would propose the insertion of some wording there to address circumstances where there is a licensed independent clearinghouse who is also providing and licensed, performing the functions of and is licensed as a central counterparty, so they wouldn't be paying two levies. And then on page 11 in table A, in the row relating to bank or branch, in the column that indicates the description of variable, we would correct the word. It says standards currently, and it would be corrected to read standards. It's proposed. And so those are all of the proposals for Schedule 1. And then we could move to, Schedule 2. In item 1, in paragraph A, we would insert after the word a bank to include the words or a branch. And that aligns with what is indicated in Schedule 1 in that regard. And then on page 15, in item 1, we would omit a paragraph what is indicated as paragraph ZB, and renumber what is currently paragraph ZC, which is the paragraph that says a financial service provider authorized in multiple categories, to be the new paragraph ZB. So you would delete one of the paragraphs in item 1 there. And then on page 15, we would make a similar amendment to item 2 that we indicated above to be made in Schedule 1 for item 2. The wording would be identical to address the aspect of a licensed independent clearinghouse that we described previously. So we would propose a similar amendment to that item 2. And then in table B on page 16, in the row that indicates non-life insurer and Lloyds and the column description of variable, we would adjust the definition for variable C. And we would basically, where it's in variable C currently, it refers to the most recent annual quantitative return template, and it currently says submitted to the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, and that should rather refer to the Prudential Authority, not the Financial Sector Conduct Authority. So we would adjust that wording to indicate Prudential Authority. And then in table B, on page 16, in the row for non-life insurer and Lloyds, And in the column for variable amount, we would basically propose there was a formatting error in the table version of the bill. And so we effectively would propose to ensure that there is a return indicated after where it says B, and have it separated properly so that the B and V2 are not right next to each other. So it was a formatting question we would correct there. And then on page 17 in the row for life insurer and the description of variable column, we would again propose a substitution in variable, the definition for variable D, to remove the reference to Financial Sector Conduct Authority and include a reference to the Prudential Authority instead. And then similarly, on page 17 in the row for micro insurer, in the definition of variables, we would propose a similar correction in variables E and F to remove the reference to Financial Sector Conduct Authority and substitute Prudential Authority. And then also in that row for micro insurer, in the variable amounts column, we would again, to correct a typographical formatting error in the table, we would effectively propose that a return be inserted after E so that E and V2 are not linked together as it's currently indicated in the tabled version of the bill. And then similarly on page 20 in table B, under the row for pension fund administrator, we would again insert a return after M between M and V2 so that they're separated. And also in the row for collective investment schemes, we would insert the reference, a return between N and V2. And similarly in the row for collective investment schemes and hedge funds, we would insert a return in that variables column between P and V2. And in the row for foreign collective investment schemes, we would insert a return between R and V2. And then on page 21 in the row for collective investment scheme in participation bonds, we would insert a return between column between U and V2. Now the final amendments we would propose, they relate to and they arise from the presentation made this morning and the proposed adjustments to the levies for financial sector or financial services providers. And these amendments were not included in the draft A list that was sent through last week to the committee, but if the committee agrees to the proposal to make those adjustments to the levies, I will send an updated version of the document that includes the following proposed adjustments to table B on page 21. So on that, on table B, page 21, we would adjust firstly the row for category 1 or 4 financial services providers. We would in the column for the base amount, we would reduce that amount to 3,600. I think it's 4,000 currently. And then in the variable amount, we would adjust that to 520 to read 520 times W, from what it currently states. And then in the column furthest to the right, we would adjust the maximum amount to 2,500,000 rand. So that would be the proposed adjustments in line with the presentation that was made this morning. And then in the row following that, for category 2A or 3 financial services providers, we would adjust the base amount from 8,000 to 7,500. And then the variable amount in the formula V1, we would adjust it to read V1 equals 520 times W. And then the capped amount, the maximum amount, would again be 2,500,000. And then finally, on page 22, on the row for category 1 or category 4 financial services providers, in respect of only the following financial product subcategories: long-term insurance, subcategory A, or friendly society benefits, we would propose the adjustment of the base amount to be 3,600 from 4,000. The variable formula would be adjusted to 250 times W, and the maximum amount would be 2,500,000. And then the last amendment we would propose to schedule 2 would be a table on page 22. We would omit the row for financial service provider others. We would not retain that category in the schedules. So that completes the proposals that we would have for the levies, financial sector and deposit insurance levies bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Janine. So, can I check whether we're dealing with the two bills first, and then we have a discussion? What was the process, Alan?
So the committee will then adopt the bill as amended by the proposed A list. It's obviously if the committee is going to agree to it. So the committee would need to move and second for that. And then after that, go to the report on this particular bill, go through the report, and then have a mover and seconder for the report as well. And then we move on to Bill 4, and the same process will apply for Bill 4. The bill, move a seconder, and then the report, move and seconder.
Thank you, Anand. Honorable members, there is the bill. Any mover for the adoption of the bill?
Thank you, Chair. I move for the adoption of the bill.
Thank you, Honorable Mabiletsa. Any seconder?
Seconded, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Skosana.
Chairperson, could you please note the DA will reserves its position?
Okay. Thank you, Honorable George. The DA reserves its position on the bill. Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Abram, I'll just project the report. Just give me a second.
Okay. But the bill stands adopted. Now the report. Thank you, Aaron.
If I may come in, Chair, just to guide the members on the structure of the report.
Thank you very much.
This is a Section 77 bill, which means it's a money bill. Since there are amendments first, I think we need to ask the National Treasury if, because in terms of compliance with provisions of the Money Bills Act, Section 11B says that there needs to be a letter from the minister just commenting on those types of amendments. I don't know if that is necessary, if they could clarify that, because I see that the committee has adopted the bill. And maybe if they can clarify us on that before we go through the report.
Okay.
Was there a need for that? Yes. It's Section 11.6B of the Money Bills Act. It requires that the minister must comment on if there's any amendment to a money bill.
Anybody from National Treasury who wants to clarify us on that one?
No, Chair, I come in. I think, as it's Italian who spoke, I don't know, but I think he's right. We do need a letter, and we just need to check that process. Janine, do you want to come in?
Thank you very much. Now, I think because all of the amendments that have been considered and adopted by the committee have been proposed by the National Treasury, we may perhaps want to send a letter confirming, but I'm not too sure. I think, you know, Section 11 is more to, could, you know, ensure that if the committee proposes amendments that were not sort of proposed by the National Treasury, but the committee may have determined or recommended and proposed, in its deliberations, then it would be important for the minister to be made aware in terms of the process and have an opportunity to respond, etc. But this seems to be a slightly different situation. So it's because the Treasury is proposing.
Janine, let me come in here. I think we do need to get a letter from the minister. So perhaps I must confess it's an omission on our side. We didn't realize we were going to go through the clause by clause. We were hoping for it, but didn't realize we would. And I think let's just check with Yanga. I don't know if Yanga is here. The text team is very used to what needs to be done. Is anyone here from our text team? So Chair, I think you're going to have to let me commit that we will ensure that there is a letter from the minister, because like Janine says, these are changes from the National Treasury. But formally it needs to come from the Minister of Finance. And we will we'll try and get a letter to you by the end of today.
Sorry, Chair, Advocate Jenkins is also on the platform and I think he's got his hand up.
That would be helpful. If you can help us. Thanks, Chair. Yeah.
Okay. Advocate Jenkins, can you come in, please, on the matter?
Thank you, ma'am. And good morning, honorable members and colleagues. Yes, Mr. Momoyan is correct. We need input from the minister. Chair, the requirement of the section that my colleague, Mr. Sakele has raised is that the report of the committee must include comments from the minister. So there must be some reference in that report to say the minister responded and this is how the minister responded, whether that comes via a letter or via email or as usual, a letter per email is really not an issue of compliance with the Act. But that committee report, Chair, we need to just say that the Treasury has had these comments, or not the Treasury, the minister. So that would be critical, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Fair enough. Thank you so much. I think on that note, we can continue.
Thank you very much, Chair. The number one of the report is just the introduction and rationale for the bill. It's part of the Twin Peaks regulatory regime, together with many other acts that have been passed, like the Financial Sector Conduct Authority Act and so on. So this adds to that in that it wants to raise levies and fees. So that's why it's a Section 77 bill. So this is what this talks about, the rationale of it and how this process started with in 2011, leading to the introduction of these bills in 2014. First one being the Financial Sector Regulation Bill, which was passed in 2017, introducing the Twin Peaks model. If you can go to 1.7. So this system created these two main regulators, which is the Prudential Authority and the Financial Conduct Authority, which are both responsible for different types of activities or supervision and regulation. If you can go down. So the objectives of this bill just basically is to raise funding. Not that there was no funding for these institutions before, but they are new activities that are being performed with these reforms, so there is a need for a money bill to raise that kind of funding. And there's new institutions that were included in the Financial Sector Laws Amendment Bill, which the committee enacted or passed in 2021, which created for the first time the Deposit Insurance Fund and the Corporation for Deposit Insurance. If you can go down, Alan. And also, based on the presentations that were given by Treasury, which shows how important this sector is to our economy, and which is the largest now at 24% of the GDP. So it plays a very crucial role in the economy as well. So this is what this is just highlighting as well. Can you go down, Alan? So then the second section talks to public participation and how the bill was introduced to Parliament. And although the committee made a call for public comments and oral submissions, we did not have public hearings this time around, but we had written submissions from stakeholders. Those are the stakeholders that participated, especially in the slavers bill. We can go further, and there were also engagements that National Treasury undertook before the bill was introduced to Parliament. And number three is just a summary overview of what the bill covered. We've gone through this bill now, and this is all that was covered in it. If you can go further down. The main issues raised in the public hearings, they touched on a number of all the comments that were given, touched on almost all the clauses, and in some instances the National Treasury agreed with the stakeholders, in some instances it did not, and there are details of this in the response documents. But the main issue, if you can go down, Alan, the main issue that was raised, which I thought is worth discussing in the report, was the issue of compliance costs, which was raised also by members during engagements. So the main issues that were raised are those ones in 4.4, which were mainly about complaints about duplication of costs and the special levy and the increased cost of compliance when it comes to this bill.
And then from 4.5, we detail how the National Treasurer responded to that. If you can go further down. Basically, on issues of the special levy, it was stated that that levy is the once-off charge and to just alleviate the pressure on the institutions, it will be spread into 2 years, where in the first year, the levy will be paid at 7.5% and so on, and then falling away in year three. Also, there are issues when it comes to issues of competitions that were raised during the public hearing and barriers to entry. There is clause 11 in the bill which accommodates instances of hardship whereby now institutions can apply to the regulators, or the regulators can, in their own accord, initiate that process. So below is just the committee observations that I thought are important to highlight when it comes to this report. On 5.1, to note that it's scheduled for public hearings on this bill, and it would have benefited more if it hosted public hearings or stakeholders made oral presentations to it. But this did not happen. I think it's the first time that I'm in the committee that there was no oral submission on such an important bill like this. But it may mean that the National Treasury really did consult broadly with the stakeholders. But in any case, the written submissions were very comprehensive. That is there in 5.2. Because they led to all these amendments that have been proposed now in the bills that we're dealing with just now. On number three, this one just summarizes that this bill is part of the Twin Peaks system. And you can go further down, highlighting other acts that form part of this, and highlighting in 5.5 that although this is touted as maybe the last in the implementation phase of the Twin Peaks regime, the committee is still awaiting the COFFEE bill, which has not been tabled in Parliament, which will assist with consolidating and strengthening the market conduct laws, protect customers against weak and harmful market practices, and also promote financial inclusion and financial sector transformation. I thought it's important to include that. 5.6, the committee notes that the levies and special levies will provide the necessary funding mechanism to enable the sector to perform its functions, and also it highlights the cost breakdowns that were highlighted in the document that we received yesterday, which is a socio-economic impact study, which was summarized by a National Treasurer for the committee. So it highlights the funding there. Mainly the funding of the system right now will amount to about 1.6 billion per annum. It will fund the Prudential Authority, it will fund the Financial Sector Conduct Authority. And if you can go down, Alan, it will also fund the Office of the Pension Funds Adjudicator, the FIACE Ombuds, Financial Services Tribunal, Ombuds Council. On 5.7, the committee notes that based on the estimates made by National Treasury, having undertaken consultation with regulatory agencies, direct costs of regulating under the Twin Peaks system will amount to 1.6 billion per annum. This represents a marginal increase of 290 million on the current costs of about 1.3 billion. And the study that the National Treasury presented shows that actually the banks and the insurers, which are the largest contributors, contribute about 0.3% and 0.2% respectively of the operating cost of this regime. And it stated that this amounts to less than 1% of their profits that they generate per annum. And there's that table that I included there, which claims that the cost on consumers will be about 50 cents a month towards these levies. National Treasury further illustrated that the calculation of the levies is proportional to the size of an institution, whereby in the banking sector, the largest institution will pay 45 million and the smallest will pay only 53,000 per annum. That cascades down where you find that cooperative financial institutions end up paying no levies at all. They are exempted, in other words. And the committee should note also that Clause 11 also mitigates a number of issues of hardship for which may enable entry for smaller players into the industry. And that the special leave is only for these setup costs that are proposed in the regulatory regime. To also highlighted that the committee believes that although these may be necessary costs, it is concerned that these costs will be borne disproportionately by the customers, particularly the poor and low-income earners. This is why the committee ordered ENTI to present to it a socio-economic impact study on the levies bill before it deliberated on it. Lastly, the committee recommends that an independent survey be conducted to examine the actual personal cost of the levies to consumers after a reasonable time they have been collected under this system. So that's the report, members.
Thank you. Zakele. Honorable members, there you are. We are called upon to adopt it. Any move for the adoption of the reports?
Chair, if I may just come in, I'm sorry to interrupt like this.
Okay, sure.
I think we must just check with Advocate Jenkins, and I know that Yanga Mputa is also here, that given the point that Zakele made, and I must thank him again, because I momentarily forgot to date Samanibo, that, you know, we will send a letter to the minister, but can the committee adopt it before you have the letter? That's just the point I want Advocate Jenkins or Yanga just to comment on, just to make sure procedurally everything is okay.
No, it's okay. It's fair enough. Yes. Yanga, are you there?
Yes, good morning, honorable members. I think Advocate Jenkins can comment, but my understanding is that a letter has to be written first requesting the changes. I don't think there can be an adoption without the letter requesting the changes, but Advocate Jenkins, I request your further intervention, because we must request changes in terms of the money bills amendment process. They can adopt maybe to say we've read and agreed to it, but they still need the letter. Thanks.
Okay. Advocate Jenkins.
Chairperson, thank you. Chairperson, maybe just in context what my colleague Nyanga just said, Advocate Mputa, the request from the minister is really pertaining to section 14 of the Moneyballs Act, where the minister proposes amendments. So that says that the committee may consider amendments proposed by the minister or the House. Now, Chair, what we have here is the department, the minister, proposing amendments or making proposals, but the committee really has taken these, and this is the committee's proposals. So the committee could consider this and deal with it. I think, Chair, this bill and this process we are now talking about specifically falls under Section 11 of the Money Bills and Related Matters Act. That's revenue bills. This is a revenue bill. And the revenue bill requires that there must be comments from the minister on any proposed amendments in the report of the committee. So the comments from the minister is not something, in my view, that the committee can change. What the committee's report must do is we've had these comments, and the report may, as it does, indicate that these are the suggestions or what we received from Treasury during the deliberations on the bill. And as a matter of fact, from the public participation, because this matter of breaking up of an annual amount that has to be paid for the regulatory functions is something that came from the written comments we received, if I remember correctly. So Treasury basically has agreed to this and has given us, and thank you for that, because they always make my work much lighter, has given us a draft to consider. The committee has adopted that draft into the new bill. And now what is necessary is the report must say, what does the minister think of these amendments made by the committee? So, Chairperson, my view is that I would agree, first of all, with my colleagues to say the perfect or the most simple procedure is to wait for the letter, to put the letter in the report and to have that report served before the members of the committee. But, Chair, I do not see legally a problem with the report being as it is, the committee adopting the report to say, yes, we adopt the report, and we want to include the comments of the minister. Those comments then come maybe later this afternoon or whenever, or maybe obviously before the report is submitted to be ATC'd. But the comments come, and those comments are then just put into the report, because that is what Section 11, subsection 6B require. We don't have to have a letter proposing these amendments as the case of section 14. Chair, that is my view. So I think if it is in the interest of time for the committee to do that, the report can be considered subject to the comments of the minister being included. And those comments can then be emailed later and the report can be finalized. And I think members should be free and mandated to say, we want to talk about these comments prior to set or to ATCing the report. Chair, that's my view.
Okay, so it means that we can, in this instance as well, take the earlier advice by Momo to commit to submit the comments from the ministry. If I may ask from our own parliamentary officials, when is the report tabled in the House? Is there a date set for it?
For now, there's no date set. Obviously, with the mini plenary's budget votes, that takes priority. So I haven't seen it on the latest parliamentary program. And it will also take us a few days to effect the amendments. If I would strongly advise against having it next week if they want to force it, or if the table division decide that the debate should be next week, I would safely say that the week after would be probably the best for the House to consider this. But as it stands now, there is nothing on the parliamentary program for this to be considered this term.
Okay. I think it is advisable that the National Treasury acts as early as today, so that if we as the committee adopt it now, at least we have a commitment that says it will, the comments will be attached today still, so that whatever happens, we remain ready. We can, as the committee, the debate in the House, that we all have a look at the comments by the ministry. Thank you so much. I think that takes care of the report. Honorable members, we were just on the point of adoption. Can we have a mover for the adoption? Or do members want to comment on the process that we have just discussed? I'm open to that as well, honorable member. Okay, honorable Skosan.
Yeah, no, thank you very much, honorable chair. I think we agree with your advice that let's proceed with the adoption. However, I think the National Treasury must just make sure that we get that letter. And then I think if it's possible, if it's possible, maybe in next week, in one of the meetings, we might then squeeze that letter just for members to see it before the debate in the House. So I agree that let's proceed and adopt the report. And therefore I move for the adoption of the report. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Skosana. Any seconder for the adoption? Any seconder, honorable members?
I second, honorable chair.
Thank you so much, honorable Mabiletsa. I'm sorry, with your permission, honorable members.
Chairperson, could you please note the DEA reserves its position?
The DEA reserves its position. Noted, honorable judge. Noted. Thank you very much. There being no other hand visible on the platform, can we now step off this item and go to item 3.2, which I think, Alan, we will probably deal with it in the same manner.
Yes, Chair, that's correct. I've just projected the bill as introduced in Parliament. The proposed amendments on the A list, if I can also just ask Janine or someone from her team just to highlight when the committee goes through the clause by clause, if they can just indicate where there are proposed amendments. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much, Alan. So the first proposed amendment would be on page 5, item 3, which amends section 166BG of the Financial Sector Regulation Act. And we would propose an amendment similar to what we proposed in relation to the Financial Sector and Deposit Insurance Levies Bill in clauses 7 and 9. Similar wording to provide for a pro rata refund of premiums that would be paid. So again, we would insert a substitute subsection 4 and have a new paragraph B added that would indicate that where a premium has already been paid in full for a premium period during which a member ceases to be a member, a refund of that premium must be paid to the former member for the proportion of the premium period subsequent to the cessation of membership. And then the next proposed amendment would be on page 6, item 6, paragraph E, which inserts a subsection 7A into Section 239 of the Financial Sector Regulation Act. So we would, in the paragraph B of that subsection, we would, similarly to what we propose in relation to Clause 10 of the Levies Bill, we would include wording at the beginning of paragraph B to say, in respect of deposit insurance premium proposals, the minister may amend Schedule 5 with the concurrence of the corporation, and then add wording, comma, and after having published a proposed amended schedule in the Gazette for public comment for a period of at least 30 days, comma, either by substituting an amended schedule, submitting an amended schedule to Parliament for approval in accordance with paragraph C to J, or in accordance with paragraphs K to M. So that's the introductory wording we would adjust there in paragraph B. And then just further below, we would propose in paragraph E, paragraph D, we would indicate, if Parliament does not pass a resolution approving, adopting amendments to, or rejecting the amended schedule within 3 months of the date of tabling, Parliament, so we just adjusted that wording very slightly at the beginning of paragraph D. It's only a minor wording refinement there. Otherwise, that paragraph is unchanged. And then our final proposal is on page 11 in item 18 in schedule 5. In the column that says formula, currently it says levies and variable amounts in the blocks in that column. And so in each instance, we would replace levies with premium. So because it's relating to the deposit insurance premium and not levies. So we would just make that wording adjustment there. And those would be all the proposals for amendments to the admin bill. Thank you.
Wow, honorable members, sorry. Honorable members, can we adopt the bill? Any mover for the adoption?
Honorable Chair, I move for the adoption of the bill.
Thank you, Honorable Mabileza. Any seconder?
Seconded, Chair.
Thank you, Comrades Kosana. I see Honorable George, you have a hand up.
Yes, Chairperson, could you please note that the DA reserves its position?
Thank you, Honorable George. Point taken. That being done, the bill remains adopted by the committee with reservations from the DA. Thank you. Now we get to the report on the same point, on the same bill. So, Ken?
Thank you very much, Chair. There's nothing much to report on this bill, as was in the levies bill. It's an administration bill, and the committee only received one comment from BASA. No, just comments from only one organization, which is BASA. So they were taken care of, and there were no specific substantive issues to discuss. And that's it.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Zakele. Short and sweet. Momo, you want to say something?
Yeah, no, I just wanted to ask Zakele if perhaps you should just put a line somewhere about the letter from the minister or the department committed, noted that
the minister is supportive of or whatever of the amendments, and a letter to this effect will be provided later today or tomorrow.
Yes, I think on the Section 77 bill, because this one is Section 75, I don't think it... On the first one, we'll put a line on it.
But thank you, but I must thank Zakele. Honestly,
I was about to say, today he is ready.
I'm getting forgetful. And he has really been fantastic today, so I salute him.
Thank you so much, Momo. Thank you for the spirits. Much appreciated, really. Honorable members, it's our turn to adopt now the report, the short and sweet report with the additions. The additions no longer, because it's Section 75. So, okay.
No, Honourable Chair, I move for the adoption of the report.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Any seconder?
Honourable Chair, I second the adoption of the report.
Thank you, Honourable Mabiletsa. Honourable George?
Please note the DA reserves its position. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Honourable Members, the report remains adopted with reservations from the Democratic Alliance. Thank you so much. That takes care of our business for today. Any announcements, Alan?
Chair, just to say that we won't
recording in progress.
The time frame, Momo, for receiving the report, the letter.
Chair, you will definitely get it by tomorrow. I'm going to try for today, but as you know, the minister is making a speech in the house today. So, but we will try and do it today.
For sure. No, thank you so much.
Tomorrow. Yeah, sorry.
Okay. Thank you so much. Yes, you are correct. Today, as National Treasury, you are presenting the budget vote, and there will be a debate. I want to appreciate the fact that honorable members are all here to discuss yet another report, and at the same time, they have to prepare for the debate later this afternoon. The commitment from honorable members from all the parties is much appreciated. And I want to appreciate also the work that has been done by the parliamentary staff. Dr. Thope, Momo Zakele is a doctor. Dr. Thope, thank you so much for the content. Work that you have done, and Alan and everybody else, thank you so much. We thank the National Treasury and everybody else who has presented from department. Thank you so much for always availing yourselves when the committee needs you to enlighten us on some of the matters. Thank you very much. The meeting stands adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you,
thank you, Chair, and thank you to the good doctor.
Janine and Vukile, are you still online?
Yes, Alan.
Janine, thanks.
Yes,
if you can please, if you guys can please send me the updated A-list.
Yes, I'm going to do that right now. I'm just I'm going to click send.
Okay, thank you. And Vakile, just the presentation, because I'll probably get an email from PMG and a few members asking for the presentation.
Okay. All right.
Send it. Thank you. Thanks. Bye.
Can you call me?
Can we just all connect